Hey, everyone, and welcome to At the Letters for June 20th, 2023. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you. Arden's Welling in Miami, about to talk some Toronto Blue Jays with us. And this show this week is produced by Mike Rogerson and Nick Andrade. So thanks to both of them. Thanks to you for listening to us on ATL. Arden, four words you do not want to hear if you're a Toronto Blue Jays fan or player. Now pitching, Ernie Clement.
Yeah, that was something on Monday. 11-0 loss at the hands of the Miami Marlins. That's a tough one.
It really was. So, okay, so that's coming on the heels of a tough series in Texas, which itself was coming on the heels of a tough series in Baltimore. It's not going great on this road trip for the Blue Jays. And as with any week, you hesitate to kind of draw too many conclusions from it. But what can we take away from a road trip where things are not going well for this team?
Things ebb and things flow. Listeners of the podcast will know where we're going to stand on this and the long view and the broader perspective that we like to take. The one thing that really sticks out to me right now is that while the Blue Jays are not performing very well, neither are the Houston Astros and neither are the New York Yankees. So the opportunity that's been missed over the last 5, 6, 7 games, whatever the stretch is that the Blue Jays could have gained an advantage on those two clubs, which they are directly competing with for wild card position. As we record this, the Astros have lost 5 straight. The Yankees have lost 4 straight. I mean, the Blue Jays, with just a couple more wins here, could have at least created the teeniest bit of separation, just gained a couple games, a little bit of an advantage on those clubs that they're going to be contending with for these wild card spots down the stretch. So to me, that is the big opportunity that's been missed here.
So they've actually gained ground in the last 4 games with their lone win against the Texas Rangers. I'm not trying to put a positive spin on this. Obviously, they have not played well, but I think you're right. That is the opportunity that they have missed. There's no question about that. And when I look at this Blue Jays team, I just think they're kind of fortunate that we are now playing in an era where you have 3 wildcard teams. Because if there was just 1 wildcard team, it would not be looking too good for the Blue Jays. But as it stands, they're very, very much in the mix because you have that third way in within the American League playoff picture.
Yeah, and it's the same thing as if you get the second wild card. Like, there's no difference between those two positions, really. And the Blue Jays have 88 games to play, and they're a game out of a playoff position. So they're going to be right around that second, third wild card spot, or a game or two back of the third wild card spot, right through until late September. Like, I don't think that we're not going to know, you know, where the Blue Jays have ended up. Like, we're not going to have any certainty on things until, like, literally that final 2 weeks where they're playing the Yankees and Rays exclusively. Like, the Blue Jays end their season with 12 games, 6 each against the Yankees and Rays. And that's what the season's honestly going to come down to, barring something like extreme, right? Look, a massive Kevin Gausman injury and Bo Bichette injury. I mean, that would be really different. Or the Blue Jays, like, once again being the second half team of all second half teams, as we've seen them do in recent seasons. I don't know that you want to really rely on that and count on that being sticky across years. But yeah, barring some of those more extreme outcomes, like, it's just kind of the same thing I say every week, man. I'm tired of hearing it myself, honestly, of hearing myself say it, that they're going to be right around second, third wild card spot, a couple games out, right down until the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and I think their schedule is incredibly difficult just by virtue of facing the Rays and the Yankees at the very end. And then you look at pockets like the one that they're beginning right now, and there's a second pocket sort of end of August, early September, where you're actually facing beatable teams. And this is a chance that you have to take advantage of when you're facing, and we talked about this last week, I'm including Miami in this, to go back to the Monday game, like, they had a bullpen game. You're facing the Miami Marlins and they have a bullpen game. And then you are the team that ends up getting shut out on their bullpen day. Not great, not to dwell too much on one game, but you know, you have beyond Miami, you have Oakland coming up, you have Chicago, you have Detroit coming up before the All-Star break. The Red Sox are, you know, a good team, not a great team. They're mixed in there as well. So, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you don't get a lot of chances like this in the course of your season. We've talked so much about how, you know, they start on the road and they've been playing these stretches where, you know, May was really difficult. All right, well, now's the time that you have things flip a little bit. They really do need to start taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays are 18-7 against teams below 500 this year. So, like, that's a really good winning percentage. And if they can extend that through this upcoming stretch that you were citing, and then the one at the end of August when they get, like, you know, Washington, and they got the Cubs in there, they got the Rockies, they go to Oakland in there. Yeah, they can put themselves in better position, but I don't know, realistically I would expect them to probably play more like 580 to 600 ball through those stretches. I don't know that you want to count on them, you know, going like playing 800 ball against those teams, because in this league, like, bad teams still win games.
Yeah, and even the bad teams aren't horrible, you know, like even Oakland is probably better than we expected. You can never bank on a sweep. You got to be looking for a sweep against Oakland this weekend if you're the Blue Jays. But hey, if you win two of three, if you win one of three, stranger things have happened, especially when you're dealing with a pitching staff that continues to just have four starters. I mean, that's the fact of the matter here. And they can make it to July 1st without needing another starting pitcher in that mix. But I guess, like, now that we're seeing it in action a bit more, what do you make of, you know, the effect that it has on this team to roll with four starters, not only for the day that you have that bullpen day, but then the trickle down effect beyond that one turn of the rotation?
Well, number one, just to put a bow on what we were just talking about, like, I do want to acknowledge that coming into the season, I expected the Blue Jays to contend for an AL East title. And I would have come on here and said, like, this is a team good enough to win this division. And that's where the expectations should be. And that's what they're capable of. Yeah. So I don't want to make it seem like we're moving the goalposts here, where all of a sudden we're saying, oh, they're this wild card team and they were always that. No, coming into the season, I thought they could win a division title. I've adjusted my expectations since, based on what I've seen over 72 games or however many that it's been, right? Like, so I've based on the information that we have accumulated over the last 12 weeks, I have adjusted my expectations. I think that it's, like, absolutely a disappointment for the fans, for the organization, for the players themselves, that they're not contending for an AL East title, and doing so over the second half seems incredibly realistic at this point. But, like, when I say the Blue Jays are just going to hang around that kind of edges periphery of the wild card race, maybe a little bit in it, that's just what I think is realistic at this point. I've adjusted my expectations.
Yeah, and I think, like, to me, I think we should be moving the goalposts. Like, I think that's a good thing. They've played almost half a baseball season. So, you know, I would say, yeah, I've moved the goalposts. The goalposts used to be an American League East title. It used to be a first round bye. Look, the reality of this record, the reality of this team right now, is that that no longer seems to be, like, a realistic expectation. So you kind of have to go in the side door and then hope to win that wild card series. And then, boom, you're back to square one with whatever teams, Tampa and somebody else, who ended up getting that advantage. So you're going to have to play for that advantage in the course of one weekend, as opposed to earning it in the course of 162. But yeah, I see nothing wrong with, they've played almost half a season. So I see nothing wrong with kind of adjusting what we expect out of this team.
People will have also been sick of hearing me say this for years and years, is that, like, the MLB postseason is just a fun little tournament at the end of the year. And if you're hot at the right time, like, you can win that tournament rather easily. Just get into the postseason, like, get a spot in the dance, and then get in with two really good starters, and then one guy that you feel good about, like, taking two trips through the lineup, going five innings, five and diving, and then have, like, two really shut down relievers and a couple other guys that you, like, sort of trust, and then just get your bats hot at the right time. And hey, you just won a World Series. If you do those things, it's easy to win that tournament. You got to get in. So, you know, it's better to get in, like, winning your division and having a first round bye, because you just get to set things up a lot more optimally, and you get to rest everybody and kind of, you know, play the percentages and get the matchups that you want, and kind of get that 52% advantage rather than sitting on the 48% advantage. But, you know, with the team with 48% odds still wins plenty of times. So just get in. As it pertains to the starting rotation, yeah, the Blue Jays have a four-man rotation. And in my opinion, a much more optimal structure for this roster would actually be a six-man rotation. And we're not even anywhere near that right now. So this really does show, like, just how substantial the underperformance of Alek Manoah has been for this team. Like, they were counting on him getting close to 200 innings, having a below league average ERA. He wasn't giving them innings and he wasn't getting outs, and they were forced to demote him to the minor leagues, and they did not have a capable replacement. Like, they did not have somebody in the upper minors who could step in and, as I've said time and again, not be a Cy Young caliber ace, just be like league average, even a little bit worse. Like, just have a little bit above league average ERA and give me five innings. And the Blue Jays would have been much better off having that, but they didn't even have that. So what we're seeing now is them regularly running bullpen days, which, like, the pitching on those bullpen days has honestly, like, been okay. The two times they've gone Richard Francis, it's been fine. I think the problem is that when you then run into a rocky outing from a Kevin Gausman, a shaky one from a Chris Bassitt, which these guys are very good, but they are going to have tough outings, is all good pitchers do. Well, when those come on the heels of a bullpen day, now all of a sudden you are, like, really burning out your pitching staff. The Blue Jays, as we sit here right now, you look back to Saturday, which was a bullpen day by design. Sunday became a bullpen day when Bassitt came out of his outing in the fourth inning. And then Monday, Jose Berríos goes only four. You are asking your relievers, and in some cases position players, to get the majority of your outs over those three games. And that just puts you in a really tough spot where you're going to Nate Pearson on back-to-back days for only the third time in his career. You're going back to Mitch White a day after he threw over 30 pitches, and you're putting him back on the mound, which is, like, not something that you want to do from, like, a player welfare standpoint, let alone a competitive standpoint, but something that John Schneider was compelled to do and forced to do because of the position that he's been put in with these really short starts. Like, these are this all starts back at Alek Manoah not being what the Blue Jays expected him to be, and the Blue Jays not having sufficient depth behind their rotation. Like, that's the macro. And then the micro is some of the pitching decisions the Blue Jays are having to make in these games right now, which they are losing.
Yeah. And day to day, I mean, you think about Monday, and I was just waiting for the announcement. I wasn't sure who it was going to be, but I was waiting for the announcement because I thought, what do they do if they need to cover two innings? Like, you only had two rested relievers. You had Swanson and Romano. What if they're down three in the fifth inning and they need someone? And so, boom, here comes Trent Thornton. Which, you know, okay, that's fine for the moment. But there is it also, when you start doing this churn, you start optioning guys, and then they can't be recalled in the next 10 days unless there's an injury. So, you know, at that point, you lose some of your flexibility. You start having to make moves and make pitching decisions according to what that clock looks like, as opposed to just using your best guys, because there is so much of that churn. So, you know, again, going into Tuesday's game, we're recording this on Tuesday morning, I kind of think they need another arm, you know, because they churned through so many arms on Monday night against the Marlins. So, you know, what happens if you're in the fourth or fifth inning and you need someone? You're not going to Mitch White for a third day in a row, and Adam Simber hasn't been very good. So I sort of look at Mitch White and Adam Simber, and I'm kind of like, is there another shoe to drop here as a way to get somebody on? I don't know. I'm speculating when I say that, but I just think one way or another, they need another arm. So even from the standpoint of, like, shuttling guys, you know, across the country and, you know, AAA up to the majors and taxi squad, it's, you know, it's just not ideal. And the results aren't good either.
Well, and you're starting Yusei Kikuchi on Tuesday as well, who is, like, effectively wild at the best of times, and a guy who you have not trusted to go very far into a second trip through the order. Like, the Blue Jays, we have regularly seen them lift Yusei Kikuchi after five innings when he's on, like, 82, 83 pitches. He could definitely go back out there, but the Blue Jays, like, once they get two trips through with him and get through five innings, they're like, yep, that's, like, that's good enough. We don't really, you know, trust it a third time through. If Yusei Kikuchi is anything close to pitch efficient on Tuesday night, people are probably going to be listening to this on Wednesday, so they already know what happens. In the existence I'm in right now, I have no idea what's going to happen. But if he's anything close to pitch efficient Tuesday night, I think the Blue Jays have to extend him beyond their comfort zone because of the bind that you suggested that they're in. And then there's, yeah, there's 40-man concerns as well. You get into a point where it's like, well, I don't know, do we have to put, like, Mitch White on the IL just to get Bowden Francis back up here? Because, like, to tell you, if he's at the airport, don't get on the plane.
Stay in the lounge, buddy. We're sending a car,
right? Like, back to the ballpark you go, because you got 40-man constraints as well. Alec Manoah is still taking a 40-man spot. Like, he's not on the 60-day IL. Like, he's active in the minors, technically. He's just not starting in games. So, like, he's taken up that spot. That's, you don't get that flexibility. Yosfer Zulueta is no longer stretched out. He's a reliever now, and he hasn't thrown a pitch in the major leagues. Who else is even on this 40-man roster? Hagen Danner hasn't thrown a pitch in the major leagues, just got to AAA. Thomas Hatch is around, but he was just optioned, right? And then there's Jay Jackson, who, like, at times I've been like, Jay Jackson would be a better fit for this bullpen right now than some guys who are in this bullpen on a, like, permanent basis, thinking of Anthony Bass in particular. He's an option as well. But, like, if you wanted to get, like, a length guy back up here, if you want a Hatch or a Francis, you kind of have to put somebody on the IL at this point, because those guys were just options so recently.
Maybe it's a good time to just ask around and see how guys are doing physically. Who knows where it leads? Okay, so we've certainly identified the problem with respect to the Blue Jays. They do not have enough starting pitching. Let's talk about some potential solutions when we come back here, because they are, as you said, they're still in this, one game out, very much within their grasp. So they'll be brainstorming solutions, and we will too when we continue here on At the Letters. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters, and as promised, let's discuss some possible ways around this bind. Starting with the guy whose demotion to the minors started this situation in the first place. Arden, what's your read on how close Alec Manoah is to potentially returning to this team?
So he threw aside yesterday, and then his next sim game, I believe, is scheduled for Wednesday off the top of my head. And in his most recent one, he went 75 pitches over five. So I think the Blue Jays are going to want to get him, like, stretched out beyond that, certainly, and try to get him up, like, closer to, you know, the 90 pitch range and see how that goes. And then I really do think it is very much, like, on a sim game to sim game basis, as far as, like, how he's looking, where the velocity is, how the strength holds up over the course of an outing, how he repeats his delivery, release points, how the stuff is behaving, if he's spraying it, if he's in the zone, etc. Once they see some of those positive indicators and things they're looking to see, they'll get him into a minor league game. But, like, it's, look, once you get him into a minor league game, like, that snowball's going down the hill now, right? Because now, like, you've indicated to him, hey, you're getting closer, right? And, like, how many, you know, Alec Manoah outings against, like, high A hitters do we really need to see? You're now showing us how he's looking and showing the baseball world how he's looking. So we're assessing the pitch chart, and if it's in a place with TrackMan, we're assessing the velocity and the movement and stuff like that, and just kind of seeing where he's at. So, like, the Blue Jays have to be very purposeful about when they reintroduce him to minor league action. But, like, goes without saying, they could really use a healthy and effective Alec Manoah in this rotation right now, and they don't have it. So there's a push-pull here of doing what's best for Alec Manoah, doing what's best for this team, trying to put him in a position where he gets back to the majors and doesn't leave again and just resumes where his career was prior to this season. And it's going to be, you know, interesting just to see how the Blue Jays make those decisions.
I mean, for sure, you got to get him into some games against hitters, like live actual games, not just sim games, I would think, before he comes back. And I don't know what that number is, but, you know, I would think it's more than one of those minor league starts before he comes back. That's just me speculating. In the meantime, I think you make a good point that he probably does benefit from just not having to be under the watchful eye of fans and media and, you know, like you said, TrackMan. Like, I would be very curious to see, and I would find a way to see what that TrackMan info said, you know, if he was making a minor league start. I'm sure you would too. You know, you'd want to know what his velo is. You'd want to know how many strikes he's throwing, all those sorts of things. So in the meantime, he can kind of recover and build up without that kind of pressure, which is, I would think, a good thing. As for timelines, like, I'm not anticipating him back in the next couple weeks. Could he make a start before the All-Star break? I could see it, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it's after the All-Star break.
The absolute earliest would be early July. And it would be what you would need is for the sim game on Wednesday to go like really, really well. And then he would probably make a minor league start on like Tuesday, June 27th, because there's no minor league games on Mondays. So probably make a minor league start there. And then if that was like exceptional and he blew the doors off and you saw enough there that you're like, yep, he's ready to go. And we really need innings in the majors. Sure. Early July, like bring him back up, but that would be an extremely rushed timeline. That would be extremely aggressive, extremely optimistic for that to happen. I am not expecting that to happen. Like you said, I imagine it'll take multiple minor league starts.
For sure. Now he's down there with Hyunjin Ryu, his pal, and Ryu is also rehabbing, also working his way back from Tommy John surgery, which occurred basically a year ago, exactly. Similar, very, very similar timeline to Chad Green. And Ryu now, my understanding at least, is that he's throwing kind of multiple inning bullpen sessions and some live BP mixed in. So getting to the point that, you know, if this was spring training, maybe it's February the 15th, something like that. So I would guess he's still at least a month away. I would be very surprised if he is ready for the major leagues before the beginning of August, but interested to hear your read on that, because Ryu, of course, is a guy who's been a Cy Young finalist before. No one's expecting that from him again, but if he could make a handful of starts for the Jays down the stretch, that would definitely help them.
Yeah, I think that early August timeline is realistic. I know he's had the All-Star break in mind for some time now, but we're getting there. We're getting up to it. And the next thing for him, I believe he's got a two-up bullpen coming up later this week. I forget what day it is exactly. So a two-up bullpen basically means like he throws one, what is essentially like a simulated inning almost. Like he throws a bullpen against some hitters, however many pitches he's gonna throw. Then he goes and sits down. And they kind of simulate what it would be like to be like in between innings. Well, the offense is up and he sits down for, you know, 5-10 minutes, whatever it is. And then he goes back on the mound and throws again. So it's like a way of sort of simulating two innings, although it's not technically a simulated game. So that's still pretty early in the process, particularly when you're talking about a starter coming back, right? So I'm not really considering Hyunjin Ryu as an option anytime soon. I think Chad Green is closer, and I think that like All-Star break might actually be closer to realistic when it comes to Chad Green shortly after the All-Star break. It'll depend on, you know, how he recovers between bullpens, between minor league outings, if he gets out on a rehab assignment. Like with TJ, you just never know, man. Setbacks happen. Like guys are throwing baseballs competitively again for the first time in a year, so like there, you know, there is a curve there, and there are, you know, unexpected things that can arise. So when it's TJ rehabilitation, you never want to say he'll be back at this time, but I think Green is closer certainly than Ryu, and if all goes well, could be a factor a month from now.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprising to me if before, you know, around that July 31st, August 1st range, right around the trade deadline, that he's back. I really wouldn't be surprised, and that would be big for this team, of course. Anything else on those two? Anything else on pitching reinforcements? I mean, I don't see a lot else beyond those guys when it comes to possible solutions, other than the obvious, you know, the bullpen games, the Bowden Francis, the Trevor Richards. Am I missing something there? Is anything else you want to add there with respect to solutions for pitching on this team?
No, the only thing is I think at some point, if personnel is there, which right now is like an enormous if, and right now it's not there, I could see the Blue Jays going to a six-man rotation at some point over the second half of this season, but they would need like a healthy and effective Alek Manoah, and they would need a healthy and effective Hyunjin Ryu, or they would need to go outside the organization to trade for somebody, because I'm not seeing anyone else internally that makes sense. And in a six-man rotation, you definitely can't go bullpen day as one of the six. But I do think that at some point, that is something the Blue Jays could consider, should consider. It would make a lot of sense for guys like Gausman, guys like Bassett, even a Berríos, like just guys who have benefited from having that extra day. I think it would be more optimal for the Blue Jays. But right now, the issue is they don't have the personnel to do it.
Definitely start with five, build your way up to there. You know, we'll see if they could. But I mean, it would benefit a guy like a Kevin Gausman. You look at the numbers, it's pretty clear that his numbers are a lot better when he does throw with that extra day of rest. And then you think Berríos and Bassett would benefit as well from that?
Yeah, I think the numbers with Bassett are pretty stark as well. And like, he's also a veteran guy who's you know, well into his 30s. And then Berríos is just a guy who's like logged a lot of innings in his career. So I think it would help all three of them.
We still have the possibility of deals, and I do want to discuss that in a little bit more depth. So when we return, we will touch on the possibility of trades and what that might look like for the Jays coming up on At the Letters. All right, welcome back to At the Letters. And I mean, we're only 6 weeks away, not that far away from the trade deadline, which is a huge focal point every year for contenders and for non-contenders alike, a big point in the calendar for fans, for GMs, for players. And, you know, for the Blue Jays, I think we've had a pretty solid understanding of what it is that they'll try to do in the course of the last few weeks. And yet, you know, you hear this, and this isn't a total straw man argument, because, you know, you'll hear it on Jays Talk, you'll hear it on Twitter. What about the possibility that the Blue Jays should sell if they continue to disappoint? And Arden, I would like us to swat that aside here. I don't see it as a particularly likely possibility. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I have a sense of where you're going to go here, but you're looking at a team that's disappointed. You're looking at a team that is not playing at its full potential. What are the circumstances under which that would even be considered?
Yeah, I mean, not four games above 500 and a game out of the postseason. Yeah. Like, if the Blue Jays sell, then don't the Yankees have to sell? And don't the Astros have to sell? And don't the Dodgers have to sell? And the Phillies and the Brewers and the Giants? Like, these are all teams with 38 to 40 wins, which is where the Blue Jays are. So then all those teams would have to sell, and I don't hear a lot of conjecture about that.
And I think that's where it's worth kind of zooming out and just seeing, like, look, it's possible to be a disappointing team. It's possible to play well below your potential and have a four-man rotation and have some important players injured and still be in a position where you can win. Having a disappointment season is not an occasion to just blow it up and sell. And I think the standings tell the story here. If you're one game out, you should buy. If you're one game out, you should be adding, you should be sacrificing from your future, not the whole future, but you should sacrifice from your future to some extent in order to upgrade in the present moment. Because like you said earlier in the podcast, you never know what can happen. And so the Blue Jays, as things stand right now, should absolutely be in buy mode. They should be looking to bolster this roster with a starting pitcher or two, with another bat for their bench. That's pretty obvious. And then if they start playing way better, if they start somehow challenging the Rays for the division title, which, you know, obviously seems very unlikely, but if that were to happen, then that's a reason enough to start giving up more from your future and to start really pushing more chips in. Because, you know, you, in that scenario, if you're a team with a shot at a first round bye, you want to take advantage of that. And conversely, you know, it's obvious. If the Blue Jays lose 12 in a row and they're somehow way below 500, then you can talk about selling. But for all of the struggles that they've had this year, they've never dipped well below 500. I mean, they've always been in that mix really the entire season.
It would take something that impacted their internal win expectancy, win projection to an extreme degree. So like you said, 12-game losing streak, season-ending injuries to Bo Bichette and Kevin Gausman, like those type of things that would like dramatically impact their expectations internally. But look, the Blue Jays showed us in 2021 how they approach a deadline that looks like the one that we're approaching now, right? In 2021, they were like 3 or 4 games above 500. They'd underperformed to that point. Internally, they felt like they were better than they were going to be. So then they were to that point. So what did they do? They went out and traded for Jose Berríos, and they went out and looked for bullpen arms, traded for Brad Hand and Joaquin Soria. And like, obviously those things didn't go so well, but understand what the intent was behind those moves. So I bet you this deadline looks pretty similar. We've been saying it for weeks. They're going to go out and look for some sort of controllable piece like that's impactful and that, you know, is there going to be a part of the roster, not just for the final 2 months of the season, but for 2024 as well. And perhaps even 2025, they're going to try to, you know, just continue refreshing the roster going forward and remaining competitive in the years that they have Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. pre-free agency and the years that they have George Springer and Kevin Gausman and Chris Bassett making a whole bunch of money on their deals. Like, they're going to look for that kind of controllable piece going forward. I don't know that you're going to see them pay a really high price for a strict rental. I think I would actually be really surprised if you saw something like that. But look at what they did in 2021. That is probably what they're going to look to execute now. We have seen before how this front office approaches a situation like the one they're in today.
Yeah. And any of these front offices, right? Like if the Yankees lose 12 in a row, if the Phillies lose 12 in a row, you know, if the Dodgers do, any one of these teams, well, yeah, they're going to play the hand that's in front of them. I mean, at a certain point, if you're way out of it, if your playoff odds are like 1%, yeah, you're going to look at what your who your pending free agents are. You're going to listen to offers. If an offer is good enough, you're going to trade them. I mean, that's just the way Major League GMs operate. It's a very reasonable way to proceed for the most part. And so none of those teams, whether it's the Astros or the Dodgers or the Yankees, all of them are disappointed with the way their season has gone, I would say. And all of them have to be open to that remote possibility that they lose 12 in a row and it all collapses. But I think far more likely is that most of these teams, all of these teams, including the Blue Jays, are buying. And how aggressive you are can depend on a lot of things, including, you know, where your roster is moving forward, where your farm system is, how much payroll you have to work with. But what we've seen from the Blue Jays is, you know, they may not have a deep farm system. They don't have a good farm system right now. It's not deep, but they can take on money. We've seen that. And that can be pretty helpful as you try to negotiate trades. And, you know, the Whit Merrifield trade is kind of the perfect example of what you'd want to do moving forward. So maybe they can find something like that. I think one way or another, by the time you get to late July, it'll be pretty clear what they can do. And I think it's going to mean that they're a team that's buying.
By the way, if the Jays are going to sell, the Padres should already be selling because they're actually under 500.
So. And the Mets, right? It should yeah. be a fire sale in Queens.
And the Mets as well. So that's part of it too. Part of it is you're waiting for the market to crystallize, right? You're waiting to see like what teams like Cleveland are going to do or what teams like Seattle, Boston are going to do, right? Like you're kind of waiting for the actual sellers to be just there to be a bit more definitiveness in who those clubs are. And then obviously those clubs are just going to wait until the deadline, try to build pressure against the teams they're looking to buy and try to get a sense of the market in the opposite direction. Like the similarity in the way that front offices think and operate is kind of why everything at the trade deadline comes down to the 11th hour, right? Because everybody's just trying to run out the clock and put pressure on the other side. So don't expect anything anytime soon for the Blue Jays. Certainly don't see a lot of meaningful, impactful trades being made across MLB at this time of year. And there's a reason for that, as I just cited. And also, by the way, like the draft coming up in a nearer timeline than the trade deadline is. And there's a lot of resources and time being put towards that within front offices. I was talking to somebody, the combine is going on like right now. I think it's in Arizona. And so the Jays have a bunch of front office personnel there looking at players and some of the testing and stuff that's going on there. So like this time last year, like the Blue Jays would have been sitting down with Brandon Barriera for like a personal, you know, in-house meeting or whatever, right? And like calling around to all of his you know, former whatever high school coaches and people that he came up with playing travel ball and at elite programs and stuff like that. They would have really been like building out, you know, their understanding of him and getting to know him and just getting an understanding of what it was going to take to make him a part of the Blue Jays organization. So that's like a lot of the work that's going on in front offices right now with trade deadline preparation still occurring, but on the back burner to the front burner that is the upcoming draft.
Yeah, the draft is a big deal. Of course, you have to meet with those young prospects and their advisors, not agents.
That's right.
Advisors.
That's the term. Yep.
They may be other players' agents, but they are just the advisors of the amateur players who definitely don't have pro representation. I think the priority for the teams like the Blue Jays and the Phillies and the Padres I mean, the priority is always the major league team. Like you have to win. You have to do everything you can. And these front offices are fully capable of operating on two fronts. And you can have the draft, and you can have your, you know, Shane Farrell leading your amateur scouting, and Tony LaCava seeing your top draft, you know, prospects, and maybe some other front office folks seeing that maybe one or two that you're really zoning in on for that top pick. That's all possible. And you can still, you know, prepare for the trade deadline, still operate on player development fronts. They can do those multiple things in the same way that, you know, you can do a podcast and write out game story later in the same day. I think that if there was a deal that really made sense for the Blue Jays, they would be on it. And I think that they would not hesitate to make a deal that made sense. But the fact that they haven't made a deal tells me that the prices are pretty high for what is a very, very obvious need in the starting pitching department.
Yeah, I just don't think anything like that is imminent. If there was, you know, it comes down to what are your opportunities? And I can't imagine the Blue Jays have a lot of opportunities on what even constitutes a trade market right now. That might even be a little bit like extreme to call it a trade market. Like the kind of trades like the Blue Jays have been talking about over the last few weeks was like trying to trade Anthony Bass, you know, which, like, by the way, the Blue Jays came very close to doing before he came out and said the things that he said. And then all of a sudden, the teams that were, you know, talking to the Blue Jays about trade kind of backed off of that a little bit, perhaps sensing that Anthony Bass just put the Blue Jays in a really difficult position. But, you know, the Blue Jays did come close to a trade there. But again, that would be a trade that is like, hey, let's get out of Anthony Bass's money for a player to be named later. It's not, hey, here's a trade for like a controllable starting pitcher or a power hitting right-handed outfielder who's you know, going to be in our lineup every day. Like, that's not the level of trade talk that's going on right now. It's the very fringe marginal stuff.
I would put it at, and tell me if you disagree here, I would put it at like 2% chance that the Blue Jays end up selling. 2 to 4% chance.
As we stand here right now, it would be, yeah, I guess I would allow a percentage point or two for like some sort of insane run of injuries, like, I suppose, but it's just not realistic. No, and nobody serious is saying that the Blue Jays are going to sell.
No,
like, we spent way too much time on it. Honestly, this is beneath us. We shouldn't, like, this shouldn't have even been raised on the podcast. We're better than this.
I think it's a useful exercise to at least explore how these things are thought out within the front office. But let's get to Spencer Horwitz. He debuted over the weekend in Texas, and he's been on base a fair bit. So that's a positive for the Jays. Obviously, Brandon Belt now injured. I kind of remain a little bit intrigued for sure, but also hesitant to jump too far in on Spencer Horwitz, just knowing that this is a guy who hit two home runs in the course of his entire minor league season.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's done a lot of work to increase his exit velos during his minor league time, because obviously, like, you want to see some more power from him. And he made a little adjustment in his setup. Like, if you watch him hit, like, he does have a very unique setup at the plate. Didn't always look like that. Like, he used to have kind of a waggle in his bat, and his hands would get kind of far away from his body. And now he does this like very steady like bat tip sort of thing. Almost his hands are kind of tilted forward, but that's just something that just, like, it's a cue that lets him keep his hands close to his body, which is the biggest thing, because when he does that, it's a much more like direct, compact path to the ball. His swing kind of stays on plane in the zone longer, and lo and behold, he gets higher exit velos out of it. Like, that's something that, like, increases exit velos from like kind of the mid 100s to like kind of the high, like, I'm talking 100 to 110, like from the 105 range to like the 108 range. You know, it gave him some more juice, right? So there's that development is like still occurring. This is a guy whose swing the Blue Jays really liked when he was at Radford, and they got him in like the 24th round. And I know there are people in the player development group, the amateur scouting group, who were like, hey, we can help this guy get better. Like, we see some potential in this guy's swing. We think he's got a good chance to hit. And so the Blue Jays went out and drafted him in the 24th round. And hey, looks like some of those PD folks and some of those amateur scouting folks were right, because like all he's done is hit at every level through two games. That includes the big leagues. It's like, it's a good story for, you know, folks in the organization who are working to develop and get players better. Is Spencer Horwitz going to take the Blue Jays to the World Series? Probably not. But I'm not so jaded as to, you know, deny that, like, this is a really cool story. And it's kind of nice to see him come into the big leagues and you know, work long plate appearances and work walks and like look composed, not look rattled, have a lot of metal, really do the same things that he's been doing throughout the minor leagues. Like you talk to people about him and it's like, this guy doesn't take a plate appearance off. Like this guy doesn't ever give one away. He doesn't get himself out. He like does his preparation. He's ready. He knows what he's going to be thrown. He knows what he's looking for. He's very disciplined, very selective. He really is very smart and has a really good plan at the plate. So it's been cool to see some of those things we've been seeing from him in the minor leagues over years now turn up at the big league level. I'm really happy for.
Yeah, it's a cool story for sure. They need the offense from anywhere they can get it at this point, with Brandon Belt down, with Alejandro Kirk also down. That opens up a lot of DH at bats on this team. And I think, you know, Horwitz was not the best hitter at AAA, but he was on the 40-man roster. And I do wonder, like, looking at Davis Schneider and what he's been able to do, and speaking of late-round picks, I mean, Davis Schneider, this is a guy who was drafted in the 28th round in 2017, basically a non-prospect going into the season, wasn't in big league camp except for the occasional, you know, we need to fill in a gap here type game. And then Davis Schneider's gone out, and at last count, 14 home runs. He's hitting great, showing a lot of power. I wonder, you know, if neither one of these guys had been on the 40 man, I really wonder who would have gotten the call. And I tend to think it might have been Schneider. Horwitz is on the 40 man. He's up. It's a great story, as you said. And so, you know, we'll see what he can do with it. But if there's another opening, I tend to wonder what Davis Schneider could do, especially as you start looking medium term on this team. Matt Chapman's a free agent after this year. You know, they're going to need more infielders. And ideally, you have some guys come up from within the organization and show that they can do some things. Because I'm not sure that Santiago Espinal or Kevin Biggio is the guy that's going to replace Chapman on an everyday basis. And so I think you do want to start exploring some of these fits and what they can look like, even medium term.
Yeah, and credit to Schneider for really taking advantage of what I'm sure is increased playing time and increased opportunity with Addison Barger being hurt. I mean, that is the guy who, in this spot that you are identifying as a need next year, which is totally correct to identify, and pretty weak free agent class, by the way, upcoming. Blue Jays had hoped like Addison Barger was going to show up this year, carry over what he did last season, then really break out and continue to, you know, just do some of the things that he was doing. Unfortunately, he has been hurt and unavailable. And, you know, I guess there's, you know, it's a little mysterious what's going on with like the ligament in his elbow and whether he's going to need a procedure after the season or not. You don't want to speculate there, but I don't know that he's necessarily out of the woods with this thing. We'll see how he looks when he kind of gets back to AAA and kind of gets some consistent playing time and how things go for him. Like the tools are off the charts. You want to talk about exit velocity, you want to talk about like arm strength from the left side of the infield. You know, this is a guy who makes very big movements at the plate and creates quite a bit of elo when he impacts the ball. Really aggressive approach, and like the biggest arm on the infield in the Blue Jays system. So, you know, that's really the guy who it's going to be interesting to see over the back half of the season. But with him out, yeah, Davis Schneider has stepped up and Spencer Horwitz has gotten his big league opportunity. It's cool to see.
Yeah, it definitely is. And there's always room for guys who can hit big league pitching. Hitting AAA pitching does not mean you can hit big league pitching, but it's a sign that you're at least deserving of the chance to figure that out. Interesting to see what Horwitz can do in the meantime. You know, as I mentioned before, Alejandro Kirk being injured does open some things up, not only for Horwitz, but also for Danny Jansen. I mean, they're going to need a lot from Danny Jansen in this stretch. You never want to see a player go down. It's never convenient to have a catcher go down. Puts pressure on the rest of your roster, and especially, of course, on the other catchers. But I don't know if there's ever a time that you're going to have Danny Jansen in there a lot. This is probably it, just given that, A, he missed 2.5 weeks already. So from that standpoint, he hasn't been overused in the course of the last month. And B, his bat looks great. He's really tapping into that pull power on fastballs. And that's a great sign for a Jays offense that needs all the home runs it can get.
Yeah, the customary Danny Jansen off a rehab assignment hot streak, which is the Blue Jays will sign up for. They'd love to get it without having him on the IL in the rehab assignment. That's neither here nor there. With Kirk, like if Alejandro Kirk played a different position, I don't think he goes to the IL. I think the Blue Jays just try to kind of sneak forward with like him being unavailable for a few days. Cause like he doesn't have a fracture. The problem is he had a laceration from that 96 mile an hour fastball from John Gray that he took, and he got a couple stitches in there. And the thing about stitches is it takes a couple days to heal, right? So it's really only going to take like whatever it is, 3-4 days for just inflammation, swelling, soreness to go down, the stitches to kind of take and heal, and Kirk to get back to a point where he's like swinging a bat competently. But the thing is, he plays the catcher position, and the Blue Jays are in a series right now in Miami where they got two night games and then a 12:10 p.m. start on Wednesday. Like Tuesday to Wednesday is essentially just a doubleheader in a way. Like Blue Jays are going to play two games in like 20 hours. So they didn't really want to go with one catcher on the roster at that point, or recalling Tyler Heineman for like an Ernie Clement and then having, you know, two roster spots tied up by it. They're like, all right, we'll just IL Kirk, but it should be the minimum. Like it should really just be the 10 days and then Kirk will be back. So that's really positive. Brandon Belt, I was talking to him. He was running in Texas on Sunday. Said he still feels the hamstring like a little bit. Feels like he's like getting very close to returning. He's eligible to come off on Wednesday. Don't expect that to happen. I expect that he'll likely come off the IL on the homestand when the Blue Jays get back from the road in the upcoming weekend. But don't expect him to go out on a rehab assignment. I think Brandon Belt is past the rehab assignment stage of his career. He'll come back soon and hopefully pick up where he left off before. But you're right. You know, going forward, there are DH plate appearances open for a Spencer Horowitz, and you know, you hope he makes most of them. Catching playing time is open for Danny Jansen, who's obviously hot right now. You have to be mindful of his playing time as well with the groin injury that he recently had, without, you know, putting too much wear and tear on a guy who just came off of the IL. Tyler Heineman's going to catch Yusei Kikuchi or going to catch Kevin Gausman. The Blue Jays like how he matches up with those two guys. They're back-to-back in the rotation right now. It's a little bit tough, but the Blue Jays like the way that he's caught those guys. And I like the way that Tyler Heineman like finds a way to do something productive every time you see him at the plate, whether he's laying down a bunt, whether he's working a long plate appearance. He's not going to hit a bunch of homers. He's not going to, you know, drive the ball off the wall. He's probably not going to be Luis Urias and get a single every time he's at the plate, but he does find a way to do something productive and to contribute in a good way to an offense when he's up there. And then obviously extremely capable behind the plate as well. So he's been a nice piece for this club.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you think about like Kevin Kiermaier and how he talks about wanting to be the best nine hitter in baseball. And it's like, well, yeah, you'd be a good like leadoff hitter on a lot of teams, like the way he's playing this year. Like, it's, we can't really compare him to nine hitters. Tyler Heineman truly is more that mold of like, you're not a good hitter, but you're a good nine hitter, where it's like, you don't do things very well, but you also do something little. Like, there's just like a little bit of contact, or I'm sure some of it's BABIP, but I too have been kind of impressed by like you said, like the little bunts and the little just like getting something done. So that's something. And as for Brandon Belt, I cannot see any hitter less likely to go on a rehab assignment after 10 days. I would have been, when you were like, yeah, I'm like, there is no chance that a 10, like that is just, we saw this guy in spring training, even spring training. He's basically like, yeah, get me in for, I don't know, 4 games and I'm good. And it's like, the 35 years old. Yeah, he's not going out of rehab.
No, I think he'd be okay with me sharing this. He was like, yeah. And you know, the first few weeks of the season felt like a rehab assignment the way I was playing anyway. So yeah, he's not going out in rehab.
Yeah. Can be quite self-deprecating. And he's been very productive at the plate. Okay, well, let's leave it there. Arden, we know you got a game to cover here and then another one a few short hours after that, so won't hold you up any longer. Thanks for your time this week on ATL. Thanks as well to all our listeners who continue to find At the Letters wherever you find your podcasts and also on YouTube. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening, and thanks as well to our producers, Mike Rogerson and Nick Ungrod.